Good morning, good evening, good afternoon to all my blessed beloveds out there in Radio Land. It's Rusty. And well, it's Living and Thriving with Rusty, but I'm Rusty. Can you tell that I'm still in traveling mode? That blizzard yesterday, or the day before in the D.C., Virginia area, Lord have mercy, I'm telling you, you guys need to slow down when the white stuff hits the ground. I know I'm Southern, but I've lived in New England for 20 winters now, and at least I can drive in that stuff. Chloe actually gave up on me after a while because I'd see a car or a truck and I'd say, okay, about 4 miles down the road, you're going to see him on the side of the road. She goes, Mama, no, I'm not. I said, I'll bet you $5. And she goes, but I only have four. And I said, all right, I'll bet you $4 and you get to do the dishes. So she agreed. She stopped betting me after about 25, 30 cars in. She's like, Mom, you just know too much. I don't like you anymore. It was really quite cute. She's a funny kid, but put us behind by 4.5 hours, and it was hair-raising for sure, because I think between North Carolina and Maryland, they only have one plow. No, I'm not even kidding, because I only saw one plow that whole drive. Crazy, crazy winter effects. It's snowing up here in New Hampshire again today, and I don't know who ordered it, but you're not getting a Christmas card from me this year. That's it. I'm just kidding, but I do hate the snow. Enough said. For those of you who are following me on Facebook, you saw all the horrendous pictures of my trip and the beautiful pictures of our house that Chloe and I are just quite in love with. It's beautiful, and we're really blessed, and can't wait to live there permanently, all in due time, as they say. But what was really interesting, the most interesting part of cleaning up our new house and trying to get it settled in, and having a plethora of friends come over and help us, which was amazing, because as soon as we hit the driveway, we had a boatload of our friends there, and it was really comforting because, you know, most of our friends have moved back south or to the south for the first time and feeling very grateful. But anyway, babble along. We have these gargantuan turtles that live across the street from our new house, and they are so big. And as you know, we have a puppy, and she's a chihuahua, a little tiny, maybe 4-pound thing, and the turtles are 15 times the size of her. So I'm just waiting for, you know, the turtle chihuahua fight, because she'll just bark at them, but they're pretty big. They'll probably take her out. I don't know. Big, big turtles. But our trip was fantastic. Several radio interviews, several incredible guests here on Living and Thriving, plus radio interviews that I was on during this journey. And thank you for your patience listening to the GPS in the background through all of that, because ironically, I was traveling on the days that I was either being interviewed or interviewing. But, you know, someone texted me going, Rusty, you are very determined. And I said, yes, I am. I'm a sword-wielding redhead from the South, and my first pony was an alligator. So trust me, I'm a very determined woman. And I hope all of you are too, and that's why you listen to me every week. We have well surpassed over 200,000 listeners on an international level. Thank you. Grateful to you. And I love you. And I'm just so grateful to all the guests. If I could find sponsors for this show, I would be able to do this 5 days a week. And we have enough guests to be able to accommodate that 5 day a week request. So sponsors, please go to RustyMacDonald.com. That's RustyMacDonald, MacDonald.com. Check out the sponsorship levels, and let's try to make this happen because we're really booked until 2015. So for those of you who are on the waiting list, I love you. We'll get you on as soon as possible, but sponsorship will definitely help because that way Karen stays employed, and I kind of like keeping her around. She's pretty special. Last but not least, I have the most unique person on the planet on the phone. He is waiting patiently. His name is Dr. Ed Anult, and I might pronounce his name wrong, and he can taz me later for that. But he's president for Banking for Kids. Yes, there I said it, Banking for Kids. Where was he when I was growing up? I'm still trying to learn how to bank properly. He has come up with this great idea about teaching kids how to save at a very young age. And he designed this curriculum around money issues, the origin of money, simple interest, which I'm still trying to figure out, and Federal Reserve and all this stuff that as a almost 400-year-old adult, I don't know any of this. So it's really cool, and I hope he comes to our school to teach my 8-year-old how to pinch her pennies so that she has a better grasp of money, because my generation, I don't think that was really an emphasis. So I'm going to pull Dr. Anult on the line, and I want you all to call in and ask him questions if you can, because I know most of you sneak us at work, and some of you are international and download the archives when you're awake, and some of you are just crawling into bed, putting on your pajamas and brushing your teeth. So I totally get that you're not going to call in, but if you can, that would be great. The number here is 347-205-9443. I'm opening up the chat room, so chat away to those of you who are in the office and can't actually call, or Facebook, again, facebook.com/celiacroads. Connect with me. For my Twitter peeps out there, thank you, I think it was Tammy McCleary. What a sweet woman. She called me beautiful. I love that. So thank you for all my Twitter fans out there. You guys are great, and I'm blushing right now. So, Dr. Anult, how are you? Are you out there?
I'm hoping I'm as good as you.
As good as me? Oh, no. I'm pure joy. Love, 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 love life. So, do you love life?
We're on an even keel.
That's right. So, Dr. Anult, tell us who you are and what you do.
Who I am. Besides the plasma and the everything that forms me, huh?
I think we're a little bit more than just a meat bag, but you know, I'm more into quantum physics myself.
Yeah. I don't know, after I watch The Big Bang Theory, I start wondering who I am. I recently found that show, and I find it to be absolutely wonderful.
Everybody keeps telling me I should watch it. I don't have cable, so I'm one of those anti-cable people. Yeah, burning the TV or whatever.
To me, it's a hoot, because, you know, it's all these brainy guys who really you see in a very nerdy way, and it's very funny. But anyway, I'm a guy who kind of juxtaposed his life between two careers, one being education, academia. I'm a college dean. I'm a dean of a university. I taught at a university. I taught high school. And then the other side of me is the guy who's the businessman with a number of businesses, and one of them being the one that I guess I've done the longest, doing promotional events. And so I lived my life between these two fields. And one of the promotional events I did was create this program called Banking on Kids. And we open up banks in schools, let the kids run them using real money, and the kids amass a lot of money. I was originally going to do it in high school, but I found out that in high school you need ATM machines, because the only thing they want to do in high school is take money out. They don't want to put money in.
I don't know how far away from the teenage years you are, but I remember those days. What? I have to actually earn it? No, I just want to spend it.
Well, Thomas Jefferson said, never spend your money before you have it. And that's the problem today, is that people are spending money and they don't have it, and they go on plastic and they spend 23%, or they go into check cashing stores and they cash a check for $100 and they give the people $30, and you just don't win that way. You never will end up saving any money. And I just asked my daughter, who's 25, how much she needs to retire if she were to retire today, and she told me $1 million, and I told her she's got to be kidding me. $1 million is not gonna do it. It won't do it. At 25, mm-hmm. I'm wondering today if I had $1 million, is that going to be enough for me? So we just are so out of touch with the idea of saving, and this word retirement, which to me I think is a word you can really throw away. It's an antiquated word. I don't know how people will ever retire when they've amassed the kind of debt that they have, and they just don't know how to use that principle of simple interest called I equals PRT, interest equals principal times rate times the time period. And that's just foreign to most people, especially kids. And that's why we started this program in kindergarten through eighth grade. So we've got kids as young as kindergarten.
I love it because the few times that I've actually used cash, and this is where, as a parent, you don't really realize how influential you are until these moments come. And this isn't a pivotal, I think it's pivotal, but some parents are going to be dismissive about it. But I pulled out cash once, and my daughter was like, "What's that, Mom?" And I said, "Well,
yeah,
it's
right.
cash."
Yeah.
And she goes, "What
yeah.
is cash?" Literally.
Yeah.
And I'm going, "Well, it's how you pay for things." And she goes, "Oh, you don't use your ATM card?"
Yeah, right.
And
no,
they
really,
don't
they can't relate to it. Kids are given
they can't relate to it, yeah.
They're given 10 crisp $10 bills for a gift, and the kid says, "What am I supposed to do with it? I can't buy anything on iTunes with this."
Right.
Kids don't deal in cash. They don't see the value. So we need to get back into teaching kids about money. They need to reflect on what money really is. And the key thing is they need to save as soon as possible. And so they've got to set aside money starting very young and let it grow. And this is what we have now done so that these kids are teaching their parents instead of the parents teaching the kids.
Right.
T. Rowe Price did a study in 2013, and they found that 97% of the kids learn about money from their parents. Well, the problem is they're just not getting enough good, sound information from them.
Yeah.
So we got a program here where the kids are teaching the parents. It's kind of interesting.
So you came up with this great program. What was your inspiration behind it?
When I was a kid, I used to go to school, and I had a little book, and I was saving for bonds, U.S. savings bonds. And I would go, and I'd compete against my friends. I didn't know what the heck a bond was, but I learned that it was a means of learning how to do this compound simple interest deal. And I said, we've gotten so far away from that, we need to get back to it. So I decided on creating this program that's curricular-driven, so I wrote the curriculum to go along with it. And we give the curriculum to the teachers because 25 states in this country don't teach economics anywhere from kindergarten through 12th grade. 25 states. So the program is curricular-driven.
So were you like 5 years old and you just woke up and said, I'm gonna save up for bonds? I mean, what was the initial seed?
No, the school, that was the school's program. The school's program was to instill and show us how to do this. So I was lucky and fortunate. I was fortunate enough to have that. But then I had a dad who came to the dinner table, and it's all he talked about was the stock market. So from age 10, all I heard every day and every night was about the stock market. And I got to tell you something, as much as I guess I regretted it then, I learned something from it. So
right.
You got to have teachers. You got to have a mentor. You got to have somebody in front of you who's actually into this and doing it and can give you the information. And to go through school for 12 years and never learn anything about finance is, to me, nuts, crazy.
Well, and that's especially my generation. I think we're a little lopsided that way because we only know how to spend on credit and pray to God if we get a second job we can pay that back. So it's an interesting perspective because when I was around 5 years old, I was saving money for sure. I was saving money for my comic books or for Bazooka Bubblegum. I didn't even learn anything about bonds or stocks or any of that stuff until maybe I was 15 or 16, and then it was just a quick lesson in sociology or something. You know, it was not a young kid. So I think that's great. Good for you.
Well, I'm at the stage of my life right now where I'm trying to give back a little bit, and this is my way of giving back by getting banks to come together and partner with schools because banks are the ones who underwrite it, the program. They're the ones who pay for all the materials.
Right.
And I marry the bank together with the school, and the school gets the program paid for, all materials are paid for, and they institute it. And those schools that have instituted it have done very, very well in changing the paradigm of how kids learn and how they treat money. The bank does pretty well by themselves also because they get new people coming into the bank. New parents come into the bank and open up home loans and car loans, and That's what they're in business for. So I have a win-win program. The kids win, the school wins, and the bank wins.
How long have you been running this program?
19 years.
Okay, so give us a success story.
How about the Federal Reserve calling me up?
Okay.
And being an only child, I'm thinking, what the heck did I do wrong? You know, the Feds
right.
are calling me. And it turns out they want to fly me to Kansas City to one of the Federal Reserves to open up a bank inside of a Boys and Girls Club. And they flew me out there, and they put together about six or seven bankers, and they sat in a room. I told a story, and one banker got up and said, we'll do it. And that was the end of the story, and that Boys and Girls Club was now partnered by a bank in Kansas City. I can't get much better than that. I mean, that's sort of like the good seal of housekeeping.
That's right.
And,
let's go to a success story in regards to a youth. Do you have a youth that really was able to grasp onto this concept?
You know, I don't get to see these kids because I'm not in the school. All I do is cut the ribbon on the ribbon cutting ceremony day, and the bank is open for business. And then I hear about the amount of money that's brought in on a bank day. And I think one of the best ones I can think of was $5,500, which was taken in on bank day. And I had a bank day. It was in the inner city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And the banker from calls me up and goes, Ed, where's this money coming from? Where's it? You know, it's like, it's like drug money. What do you mean, where's
right.
this money coming from? These are parents who have discretionary dollars. They like the program, and they're putting it in the bank, and these guys blown away. And I'm saying that's
right.
the group that you're missing that group. You're not concentrating on that group. They have money. Go in and take a look at the shoes on the kid's feet and look at the NBA jersey on his back. There's about $400 on the kid. So they've got money. It's just where they want to spend it, and they happen to like the program, put money into the program, and then we woke up this bank to the point of whereby they decided to take on about 15 schools. They said, let's just keep doing it. They got it. It's a little unconventional for banks. Most of them put money into advertising through electronic or print like they always do, and I don't know who they're reaching because they don't know who they're reaching. But this one here, you got 500 or 600 kids in a school. Man, what a direct contact you have with their parents and with their grandparents. And so the kids become sort of like the Pied Piper. It's a Pied Piper program. And through them, they lead their parents into the bank because they have to go with their child to the bank. Once the kid hits $10, it becomes interest-bearing, and then the account has to be a joint account. So they have to do a
right.
joint account with a parent or a guardian with them.
All right, so because my show is based on mind, body, and soul, I have to ask the spiritual question. This is a tough one, probably. I'm going to guess that it's tough. Maybe not. You might surprise me. So in the world of spirituality, and I say spirituality because I try to encompass all belief systems, we are under the reprogramming of the especially my generation, trying to reprogram that feeling of lack of. So we're trying to reprogram ourselves and not be fear-based in the sense of lack of. When you designed your program in regards to saving money, did you design it carefully enough where kids aren't terrified of being broke like we were? Like, that's all I ever heard when I was growing up. We're broke. We can't afford anything. Blah, blah, blah. And so I live my life, again, trying to reprogram myself, not to live my life in the lack-based thinking. But for the majority of my generation, that's how we were raised. So how do you not emphasize savings but not emphasize fear? Does it make sense? Am I being clear?
Well, let me see if I can help you on that one. You know, somebody asked me, well, how early can you teach a kid about money? And
right.
I say around 5 years old, 3 to 5, four years old, I don't know, somewhere around there. A kid should be able to identify coins, and they should know what coins are worth, and that you need money to buy something. In other words, when you want something, because everything is pushed on you through the media, They do a great job of telling you you need something. You have to know how you get it. And you can't get it unless you earn it. And then you have to find out that your parents work somewhere and that they make money. All this stuff can be taught at a very early age. This has nothing to do with fear. This has to do with reality. And the reality is that you have to have this quantity of coins or this amount of money in order to buy something that you want. And the biggest thing you teach a kid at an early age is there's a difference between things you want and things you need.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can instill that at a very early age so that the child knows that they don't need this right now, you know, they can live without it. We can work on it. We can figure out a way of getting it. That's not fear. That's reality. So I don't ever want to create fear when it comes to money. Money should be something that's a happy thing, and that it's happy even to the point when you have a lot of it that you learn that you don't need all of it and you give some of it away and help other people. And so money becomes a wonderful thing if used properly. If it's just something you want to amass to hoard so you can look at it and think that you, it's all yours and that you know that you've become self-consumed in it, there's a fear in that. So I keep telling my child all the time that, you know, she's a very lucky kid, and her what she's going to have to spend her time on in life is figuring out where to give money and how to give money away and how to help other people with it and turn that into a happy situation. And so I never want to think of fear. I never want to think of this money thing as something that you should be fearful of. And not having it is not fearful. It's just a matter of sitting down and figuring out what you got to do to get it. But you're not going to get it by sitting back and doing nothing. So my whole program is based on pragmatism, that you've got to start somewhere. And the problem with this country is we're not doing a good job of starting. We don't have a start system. And so we got all these kids out there that go to school every day, and then when they come out of school at the age of whatever they do and you start talking to them about the stock market or bonds or simple and compound interest or money markets or whatever it is, they have no idea what you're talking about. I went into McDonald's one day. I told the manager, not just the little worker, the guy who runs the place, that he's doing a great job. I mean, I'm just thrilled to see what kind of work they're doing here. I bet you my stock's going to go up. He goes, what? What are you talking about? Here's a guy who works for McDonald's, has no idea that there's a stock that you can buy, and that goes up, and he can make more money than he's making on his salary if he buys the stock of the company he works for.
Right.
So there's no correlation. And
no,
that's
I don't honestly think that in the last 30 years we've emphasized the importance or the value of money. I think we've become this crazed Autobot society of binging, meaning not just food, but also shopping binging. I mean, look at this Black Friday crazy nonsense that I'm totally against. Everybody knows that. But, you know, once upon a time when Black Friday was originated, which is one of the most greediest days I've ever seen in my life, they now start it on, like, Thanksgiving Day at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Well, I'm sorry. Right. I'm sitting down on my turkey, having my turkey with my family. I'm not going out to binge and rack up my credit card because, you know, if I'm the first person in the door, I get a free TV. So what? So what? That's not more important. So I think socially we've created this problem. I don't think it's fair to the kids that are, you know, my daughter's generation at all. So I'm grateful that you have developed this program. And I'd love, this is a perfect place for us to stop for a second, and you give yourself a shameless promotion as to where people can find you, how they can reach you, and how they can get a hold of this program to teach their kids and students.
It's called Banking on Kids. You go to bankingonkids.org, bankingonkids.org, and you can find out all about it. You can see all the testimonials and see a lot of the banks that are actually doing it. You can actually see a video done by a TV station that when they covered it on one of the openings of the banks. So it's all there, and that's the place really to make contact. There is a, I'm trying to think of the bank now that just contacted us in the suburb of Boston, out where you are, that's interested in possibly doing this. They've got about 6 or 7 branch offices, and they want to tie them together in the schools. We've never been in Massachusetts with any bank, and so your audience, if they're listening out in Mass, which is close to where I grew up, where I was born, I'd love to see something done on the East Coast. I went to school at Rutgers, so I feel I'm an East Coast guy, and I happen to favor the East Coast. It happens to be to my heart, but we can only hope that the banks will or the schools will come to us and say, "Hey, can you help us?" And our answer is, we'll do it very, very quickly. And it doesn't take us long to put these together. All we need to do is print up the materials and put the logo of the school and the logo of the bank on both of them, making sure that the school logo goes larger than the bank. That's an FDIC compliance requirement. And we make sure that we protect the banks and making sure that everything is kosher. And we protect the schools. And we're the organization that makes sure that everything is compliant. So we've been doing it for 19 years. We only wish we had thousands more, because we've only still started to tap into the potential of what we can do. But we need to do something, as I said, to change the way things are being done. There's a whole subset of people out there called unbanked or underbanked. I don't know if you know that term. Kind of deposit account at an insured depository institution, meaning they don't have a checking account or a savings account. And they represent close to 24 million people in this country.
Right.
And so this is a group of people we're trying to get to so that they won't use. We got started. I got started with a little help from a lady in Chicago by the name of Oprah Winfrey. I don't know if you know her.
Yes. I've heard of her name, but I'm not really familiar with her story.
Yeah. Well, Oprah bought a unit from me in Milwaukee for her aunt, and I had the privilege of being together with her. She's from Milwaukee, because she grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, so she was buying this for her aunt, and I told her about the program. She loved the program, and she wanted to see these check cashing stores eradicated, because the check cashing stores prey upon principally women of color, and they go into these... They go into these stores and they give away 30% to cash a check, and it's just horrible. And by the way, those check cashing companies call me because they want me to take out a franchise, and I'm telling them, "Are you kidding me? You're calling the wrong guy. I'm trying to put you out of business." So I call them loan sharking operations, and that's one of the groups that we're trying to get rid of, so we can teach people that banks are not dangerous, that you know that you can use a bank and feel secure. But these are people who go into these places because, I don't know, they're illegal immigrants, or they're desperate, or they got poor money management skills, or they got a fear of a bank, and we need to teach them and get rid of that fear. So, and again, a lot of this is being done through the kids. We're doing this through our program, and the kids are helping their parents.
Well, and I think, it's, you know, a lot of the lower income areas, money management is an issue anyway, because in respect, I grew up extremely poor. We didn't even have running water. That's how poor I grew up. And money management, that was something that was never talked about or even thought about, because when we had money, it was like, you know, stealing from Peter to pay Paul, that whole concept.
Right.
What can I pay, and what are my priorities? So that's how I know finances, is what are my priorities. That's what I pay. And
that's where you came up with this idea of fear, right? Based upon a little bit of what you grew up with.
Well, it's actually a international understanding, an international movement in regards to my generation and the generation, like the Depression era generation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
you know, there was this fear based in regards to money, and you're terrified to be without, just terrified to be without, which is a direct to this binging, the shopping binging and blowing up your credit card because you're afraid of being without. And when you get into the spiritual and religious aspects of, you know, your cup is overflowing and you have to have faith that it will overflow and not to be fearful, you become wiser. So that's why I asked you those questions.
Well, I'll give you an example of that. When you say fear, you're talking about dread. You're talking about some kind of a painful emotion that's experienced when you're confronted by some kind of threatening danger or evil. And I'll give you one of the biggest ones right now. It's like, how am I going to pay for a college education? And never before have I ever heard counselors in high school telling kids, if you don't have the money to pay for your college education, don't go. And this is a whole new shift. And I'm not so sure that I disagree with it. Because if you come out of college, and you've amassed over $100,000 in debt that you're expected to pay off, and by the way, you are going to pay it off because you can declare bankruptcy, but the one thing you can't do in declaring bankruptcy is get rid of the college debt. So college debt is going to go with you even after declaring bankruptcy. You can't get rid of it. So $100,000 and trying to figure out how to pay that off is frightening. That, to me, is scary.
Gets even bigger and more frightening on a level that just makes my stomach wrench in nausea in regards to college education. So let's back it up a little bit and really talk the facts. So when you're saying $100,000 to pay a $100,000 loan, you're actually referring to a BA, a bachelor's degree. Not a doctorate, not a master's degree, not like it was when I was going to college 300 and some odd years ago. So what makes my stomach hurl is the fact that when you have a bachelor's degree, that's still not good enough for the majority of organizations now. They want you to have a master's. They want you to have a PhD. And that's above and beyond that $100,000. So what we're doing essentially is crippling our society, which is already extremely behind, to the point where we have to import engineers and we have to import mathematicians because our country is already amazingly behind in that area in regards to actually producing mathematicians and engineers that are of quality. And now we're crippling our country even more
you're living in the wrong country then.
Right. Everybody pack the bags, let's move. Let's make our own island.
You go to other countries and they pay for education. They got a healthcare system where they pay for your healthcare and they pay for your education.
Right.
So
you go to school
free. What's that?
Right. But on the other hand, their taxes are also 40% to 50%, whereas
I don't know. It's not. You know, my taxes where I live right here are exorbitant.
Okay.
And they want to put a new stadium in, and then they want to tax me more, and you can't get out from underneath it. So.
Right.
Whether it's taxes on my house or whether it's taxes on my purchases, I'm getting taxed all over the place. So I don't want to make it sound like we're not taxed to death here. We've got humongous taxes. But on top of those, we end up paying for a state education. I mean, my daughter went for state education, and her degree cost her about $70,000 2 years ago for a four-year degree.
I was a state education too, and it was, oh God, I want to say Johnson State was about $16,000 a year, and I went from January to January. I went summer courses as well because I just wanted to be done.
Expensive. So even at the state level, if you're paying anywhere from $65,000 to $70,000 her four-year degree, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. Lord.
So
my daughter's only eight, so God knows.
I like Australia or wherever where they're paying it, or Sweden where they're paying for your education and it's paid for. And by the way, you're going to schools that are better than some of these schools are better than the state universities that we go to here in this country.
Right.
So you think of some of those schools that you can get into if you're doing well, like a private school, where if you take a look at Penn, which is probably the most expensive here, Pennsylvania, which is probably around 68, closing in at $70,000 now a year, you're close to $280,000 for a four-year degree. Now, if you can get that free, whew, wonderful. So you're discouraged. I think it's very discouraging when you think of what it costs. And then if you come out and you want to become a teacher, and you're going to make $35,000-$40,000 a year after you have to pay for everything else, when are you ever going to pay off that $100,000 in debt? I mean,
well, and
I don't know how you.
That's the exact issue that we're facing as a whole country. It's a vicious cycle. But I have to stop here for a second and hold that thought, because that whole vicious circle, Lord, everybody's feeling it. You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. I'm Rusty. Today is Humpty Hump Day. It's snowing out here in New Hampshire. I'm really closing my eyes and thinking of all that beautiful warm weather and the sand on my toes that I had last week, and looking forward to spring being over, or starting here anyway, to get rid of the snow, because I'm tired of shoveling. I'm getting too old for that. This is a great place for a sponsor to sponsor Living and Thriving. We want to keep going. We have, Karen had more than 300 people request in one weekend to be on the show, and really incredible guests, like the guests that we have on today, Dr. Ed, talking about banking, teaching children how to be fiscally responsible at a young age so that they don't have the same problems that we have as adults now. Hand over fist, we're all in the same boat, and we're all trying to do the best that we can, and here's another tool for you to teach your kids to do even better, because that's what we do as parents. We like them to do better than we did. It's all a learning curve, I think. But let's take a quick commercial break, and if you have interest in sponsoring the show, please, please, please go to RustyMacDonald.com and figure out what level sponsorship you'd like.
Tune in weekly to Living and Thriving with Rusty, Inspiration on Tap. Rusty explores topics related to mind, body, and soul. For more information, go to her site at RustyMacDonald.com. Not McDonald like the farmer, or certainly not like the fast food. Rusty McDonald, just what the doctor ordered. Listen to Living and Thriving with Rusty, Inspiration on Tap. Tune in weekly to Living and Thriving with Rusty, life coach, radio talk show host, single mom, and blogger.
He forgot housekeeper, paralegal, nurse in training, driver. I'm definitely a taxi driver lately. My daughter's getting to that age where, you know, she's Miss Social Guru Butterfly. She's so funny. Great kid. Definitely connect with me on Facebook, facebook.com/celiacroads. Connect with me on Twitter. I love Twitter. I'm really getting into this whole Twitter thing, and every day there's like 59,000 more people that are joining me on Twitter, and I'm trying to keep up with y'all, and you guys are, I'm old when it comes to Twitter. I'm a Facebook girl. I've got that one mastered. Twitter, it's new. I'm getting there, but thank you, Tamara McCleary, author, writer, goddess extraordinaire, for telling me that I'm beautiful. I'm still touched, and if I could shrink you in a little bottle and put you in my pocket every day as my little happiness, that would be great. That was very sweet of you. Great, 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 great stuff on there. We are currently listening to Dr. Ed Anolt discuss banking for kids, how to encourage, inspire, and motivate children to be fiscally smarter about money and understand the pros and cons of saving or not saving, which is something that is new to me. As you guys all know, I'm just learning all that stuff. I've done quite fine for not coming from anything, so I'm pretty proud of myself. But I know I can do better, and people like Dr. Anolt who have tips and tricks and strategies to help us do better, that's awesome. So definitely check out bankonchildren.com, I think. I tried to look it up, Ed, and I have to tell you, I can't find it. Is it bankonchildren.com or .org? Because they both didn't come up for me.
Banking on kids.
Banking on kids. See, that's
.org.
Banking on, there we go.
Banking on kids. .org. Yep.
There you are. That's what I remember looking at. Fabulous.
Yeah.
So, everybody, I'm going to post this on Facebook and on Twitter, so check it out. And so give us a little idea of what inspires you as a person, Dr. Arnold.
Boy, there's a good one. I get inspired by people who have ganas. You know what ganas is?
No.
Ganas is a Spanish word. It means desire.
Okay.
And I'm inspired by people who have two things. One is desire, and the other is conviction. And I went to see Dallas Buyers Club before the Academy Awards on Saturday.
Uh-huh.
And I said if this guy doesn't win the Academy Award, I don't know what would win the Academy Award. I just was so inspired by Ron Woodruff, played by Matthew McConaughey, and Jared Leno, who played Rayon. That just really, I got done with that movie and I said, wow, this is just wonderful. So I love people who have conviction and of course the right way. I mean, there are people who have conviction and they use it the wrong way.
In a bad way. Right.
And for those people,
compassion and the pirate.
Yeah, but if you're using compassion and you're using all these things, that, my God, I get blown away. And kids are doing it today. At a very early age, we get some kids that are 12, 13 years old that create a product, and they launch it, and they make a lot of money, and I think it's wonderful. I think it's terrific. So I love the entrepreneurial spirit, and if you use that the right way, man, all kinds of great things can happen, and I see them. I love it. I don't care if it's on the baseball field. I don't care if it's in the business arena. Wherever it's used, if it can inspire other people, I think that's just wonderful, wonderful.
So you were a dean of a university, and you taught it in high school level. Did you always want to be a teacher? Did you always want to have a role?
No. I think that all came from I was in the Peace Corps. I was in Iran, and I went to Iran. I was teaching English as a foreign language when I was 21 years old. And I think I got inspired to do that through my Peace Corps days. I came back here to the States and said, this education seems to be interesting, and I went into it, and I never stopped. I kept on going, got my master's degree, and I got my doctorate. I went out to Rutgers University and got my doctorate. And I just became immersed in education, and I just kept doing that to the point of whereby eventually I went from high school to teaching college, and then from teaching college I went on to being a dean and became. But I love the Klieg lights. I just love to be under those bright lights with. I love theater and I love the magic of entertainment. And so I went into this thing. I created a special event, and I ended up with 1,000 people coming to it, and from there it turned into 10,000 people and. I love to see the people come out for this stuff. And so I created these crazy events in the area of food, sports, and education, and saw lots of people come and have a wonderful time. And I kept on trying to repeat and create different unique programs. And I'll give you an example. One of them was a scavenger hunt through the museum here in Milwaukee to find the keys to a car. And it was called Now Museum, Now You Don't. And,
Now Museum, that's very cute.
Thank you. And we gave away a car and a couple computers to kids, and it increased the attendance of those going to the museum, and the newspaper had the clues, and a radio station had the clues. And We kept giving them out, and it went over the course of like about 4 or 5 months, and they put the car down in the museum so they could show it off, and everybody won. It was great. And it was that kind of thing. I woke up one morning and I said, what if a different pro came to town, a golf pro, and you got a chance to try to beat him? And we did that for about 2 months, and we brought a different pro here, and you got a chance to go out there and try to beat the pro at his own game.
Right.
And then I did the largest fish fry, and it was named after Solomon Juno, the first mayor of Milwaukee. We called it Juno, the best fish fry. Get it?
Yes, it's very cute. You're
yeah.
Excellent pun.
Well, yeah, my first
really
event was, we have a thing called frozen custard here. It's like, it's richer than ice cream, and we've got about 50 custard stands. And so, of
mm-hmm.
course, we had to call that Custard's Best Stand. And we had General Custer eating an ice cream cone, you know. And we had thousands of people that just kept coming out because it was a very inexpensive event. And people loved the idea of mass consumption. So it was pizza. We did Da Vinci's Master Pizza, showing Da Vinci doing the Mona Lisa with his palette, but his palette was really a pizza pie. And chili was called Chili in Milwaukee, You Bet. So wonderful, wonderful events, kind of creative and exciting, and a radio station would do it. We'd give money away to a charity. I did a duck race down the Milwaukee River to win a Buick Riata car. I packaged the dirt after the World Series, little vials called A Piece of the Park. We sold 10,000 of those. So,
will you buy dirt?
Huh?
How about if I package, help me package the snow in my front lawn and sell it? Because I tried the whole thing.
You better do it quickly. There was a guy in Arizona, and he created a snowman, and all it was water with a hat and a carrot in it. There was a little pipe, a carrot, and a hat, and it was inside of one of those little dome things with water. I said, now that is good. I liked it. I bought that. That was called the Arizona Snowman. Yeah, so, or, you know, a guy created dehydrated water, which was nothing more than just a container with nothing in it, or the pet rock. I love those. Those were wonderful. I love that. I guess that inspired me.
So what are the, what do you have? Let's see, we have about 10, I'll give you about 9 minutes before I have to wrap up the show for today, but for over 200,000 people listening to this radio show, what advice do you have?
Don't scare me now. My heart can't take that, 200,000 people, my God.
I know, it's not a lot. I mean, it's, you know, you can always let me meet your neighbor, Miss O, and that would be cool. Maybe I can jump it up the numbers, but I'm doing pretty good organically, so. Tell us what you would love for us to really take away from today's show. First, I want you to shamelessly plug yourself. Take a second, think about what you want us to walk away from, and give it to us. The floor is yours, sir.
I'm going to leave you with a quote, which I always love, by Jackie Mason, the comic, who said, I have enough money to last me the rest of my life, unless I buy something. I guess that's what I leave you with, that you don't have enough money if you really don't have the money. And I think it was J. Paul Getty who said, if you can count your money, you don't have $1 billion. You know, you got to have this principle of waiting, holding off a little bit instead of having to jump on buying everything. And you have to have you got to know how to control yourself and save a little bit and not just spend everything as fast as you get it. You got superstars that are playing sports making millions of dollars, and then you find out they're broke. I mean, how do you go through millions of dollars and end up broke? Well, you do when you have the kind of lifestyles they do and the kind of stuff that they continue to buy. So we got a program here. I'd love to marry anybody out there who is interested. You can hit us on bankingonkids.org, and we'll team you up with a bank, and we'll be able to go into those schools and put the program in the schools and do something, like I said before, of changing that paradigm and helping kids at an early age to learn how to save. And that's all I really want at any of this now is to be able to increase the number of schools we have that are actually involved in the Banking on Kids program. So, and I appreciate, you know, being here today, and I'm thanking you again. And whatever we can do to get anybody who's listening to make contact with us, we'll be thrilled to make sure that we get these programs activated. And we're not making a lot of money here. We're doing this. We're about three guys in three different parts of the country who are doing this on a full-time basis, so that we can hopefully give back instead of for all the success we've had.
So, all right. So let's. I mean, we have plenty of time in the sense of, you know, about 6 minutes. So, talk to me a little bit, and you kind of touched on this, we got sidetracked there, but there is a population that you mentioned, and I know, growing up, we never had a bank account ever. We couldn't afford one. But talk to me about the individuals who don't have a bank account because they're in poverty, or they are afraid. I know a lot of people who would rather put their money in a tin can, dig a hole in the backyard, and forget about it. Is there an advantage to not participating in traditional banking as we know?
No.
I started out.
I guess I was at poverty level when I was a kid. I didn't have anything.
Yeah.
I grew up I didn't have the silver spoon or the gold spoon or any of that kind of stuff. I think we all start from poverty. You know, I think we all start from zero. As John Locke, he called it a tabula rasa. You got a blank slate, and all this stuff happens through, I like to call them mentors. And if you get good mentors, you do well. And if you get bad mentors, you don't do well. And it all depends upon who you hang around with, what your environment looks like, who your teachers are, what your parents are. Those are your mentors. And so that this blank slate gets really affected by the people that come in contact with you. Those are the people that really help shape who you are, unless you're living on an island somewhere by yourself, and that's not usually the case. So it doesn't matter the size of the city, it doesn't matter how many people there are, you still get affected by these other people. And hopefully we're here to add a little bit of help. I have a book that I wrote called Raise Your GPA One Full Grade. I have a system which will help you get better grades. If you read my book, if you do everything that's in the book, it will help you learn the tricks so that you can get around the monopoly board of school and collect your $200 and do much better. Those tricks are not being taught in school. Somebody had to be there to help you with a thing called mnemonics, which is a memory system that anybody can do. So if I said to you, what are the Great Lakes right now? Can you name the Great Lakes for me?
Only when I'm on the treadmill.
Yeah.
Then I have different body parts, and I have the Great Lakes.
If you knew the system, if you knew the mnemonic system so that you'd be able to know Holmes, H-O-M-E-S, you'll get 100 on the test the next day because it's Huron, Ontario, Michigan, Erie, Superior. But some kids don't know that system, and then they get a 60 or a 70 or a 50. So I'm just saying that if I give you and supply you with the tricks on how to read faster, on how to use mnemonics, how to take the fear out of examinations, how to use a dictionary, all these things will help you increase your grade point average. If I give you the tricks of learning how to save money that nobody ever taught you, I'll get you to save money. You need a mentor. You need somebody who will come in and help. That's what we're doing with this program. That's what
now,
I'm encouraging.
Do you have a version of the program for those of us who are considered old?
Yeah, because let me tell you something. A bank only gives half of 1% right now in interest. So that's what you call starting. That's with an elementary school kid. If I'm talking to you, I'm going to talk to you in another way, and I'm not going to talk to you about the half of 1%. We're going to move into another area now where you can earn 5% on your money.
Yeah, but don't you have to have $5,000 to earn the 5%?
No,
minimum?
Heck no, not at all.
Oh, you're going to have to come back on the show.
Yeah, and so therefore, I'll give that group of people different information on what they can do instead of making a half of one. I got to, like I used the word before, pragmatic. With kids, I don't want any kind of risk, and I got to start very, very small. But we get to your arena of older people, I got a whole bunch of things to show them how they can make more money.
Very cool. And is that also on bankingonkids.org?
No. Yes, a little bit, because we talk about the stock market, and the stock market is part of that risk. It's a little riskier. So, yes, you need to learn about the stock market, because that's where you make money, and that's where you compound money, and you compound it a lot faster.
Where do we find your book?
The book, Raise Your GPA One Full Grade, you can get on Amazon. It's on Amazon. It's been around for about 7-8 years. Raise your GPA One, the number one, full grade. And that's for really a kid who'd be about high school age, just coming into high school or in high school. And, of course, the earlier you get them, the better. I used to have parents call me when their kid was 11th or 12th grade. It's too late then. You got to do it early.
Well, I'm going to just challenge that a little bit in regards to potential college students. I have my bonus child from my ex-husband, his previous marriage. She struggles with school. She has ADHD, and she's going to start community college, I think, this spring. But I think a book like that would actually be beneficial to her, even in college, wouldn't it?
Big time. And I taught college, and I'm telling you, I would have loved to have said to a lot of these college kids, although I wasn't able to do it, here, this is what you're missing. Read this book, will you? Because you are missing skill sets. You can't take an exam. You're terrible at, it was like, it went on and on and on. Couldn't write a paper. They had no writing skills. And that's a tough one, by the way. And that's part of my book, is how to write.
Very cool. Well, Dr. Emelz, I have to say, you have been a blessing. You were definitely outside of our normal guests, and I loved it. I actually learned a little bit today, and I'm looking forward to learning more about your organization and promoting it for you, because that's awesome, and I would love my daughter to be able to take that class. She would do very well.
I got to thank you, Rusty. I appreciate the time, and anytime I can tell the story about what we do, I love to do it. And I had a wonderful Wednesday?
Wednesday.
I had a nice Wednesday. Yeah,
yay,
I had a nice
thank
Wednesday.
Thank you. Me too.
Yeah.
Well, big
so
thanks
I,
to you and
so
your team, and I'm grateful. And if you come up with another book, or if this Banking on Kids goes international, let me know. We'll plug you back on. That would be awesome.
Okay. And again, much luck with your show.
Thank you, my dear.
Talk to you later. Ciao.
All right. So Banking on Kids, who would have thunk? What an amazing story. And I love the inspiration and the motivation. And he's down to earth. What a groovy guy. Smart as a whip and just really down to earth. That's the way it should be. Sunday night show is about Tiffany. Tiffany is the founder of Yamian University. It's a personal development university, all about the self-help trifecta, the positives, the knowing your big why, and successful mindset. So if you're feeling a little low, or if you're feeling like you're dragging, tune in on Tuesday and let's yay me. Join Yay Me University, Tiffany. That's Sunday night here on Blog Talk Radio with me, Living and Thriving with Rusty, at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. As always, I love you. You're beautiful. You mean the world to me. I'm so glad we get to walk this path together and learn so much. So many amazing guests to share with you, so many amazing stories, tools, tips, and tricks. So until Sunday night, stay beautiful, live, thrive, and smile.